Adam Lapp.
The best part of waking up, it's the doo-wop, doo-wop in all I do. The mountain goat aroma, always coming through.
Always coming through.
Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop ditty. Whoa, one more cup and it's a hoo-wop, shoo-wop for me. Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
But even better on a slightly moist December morning is a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor. And I am pleased to be joined once again by our resident political analyst and commentator and all-around interesting dude, Dr. Ronald Fineman, live from home in Boca Raton, sort of rhymes, Florida, where I'm sure it's a lot warmer and summerier, I guess that's a word, than it is here in the beautiful Buckeye State. Lots of things to discuss today, Ron. First, how are you doing out there today?
I'm doing fine, and I thank you again for inviting me. You know, I really enjoy always having discussions with you about the events of the day and the week.
And, of course, the occasional wisecrack or other comments always makes it kind of fun. Of course, here on the Talking Place, yes, WWGH Radio, we offer many shows, two of which star yours truly. Show we had on before you and me was the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, where we talked about many things, including digital technology kind of being married to medical technology and medical testing. Now, Ron, you've been around for a few years. We won't say how many, but you have a birthday coming up, but you are definitely 21 and over, as I am. And in our lives, we've seen some incredible advancements in all kinds of technology, but I think especially in medical, medical gadgetry. And as I talked about last hour, there's a device called the CardioBand that you can attach to your Apple Watch, and it'll actually take an EKG. Total cost, including the subscription to the service, is very low, only $298. Could you imagine, Ron, you know, 50 years ago, that we'd have a device that you could actually wear that could even take your EKG for such a low cost, just a few hundred dollars? Does that seem kind of unfathomable to you, or is that kind of the direction we're taking, that you could, in many cases, get medical tests by wearing a device on demand? And not only that,
I think it is amazing and miraculous. I mean, after all, 50 years ago, what was the state of computers? It was just the bad beginnings, and it took up a whole room. You know, it wasn't the way it is now. So it is amazing how technology has moved us forward in the last half century.
Obviously, it can save lives and nothing else. Naturally curious scientific dude like myself, we just find it fascinating that you can just do this. So I'm happy just to go to Walmart, put my arm in the cuff, and take my blood pressure with the free blood pressure machine. But this goes a step further. Plus, you can do it in the comfort of your own home. And it's a lot more than blood pressure. It actually gives you an EKG. So it could save your life.
Fantastic.
Right. Be prepared when you speak to your doctor. So, and again, not only is it cool, but $298, as I said, you can't even walk into your doctor's office for that price nowadays. But imagine it could save your life and also make you more prepared for a medical visit. So many ways of technology is a part of our life.
I got to say that if only human relations, where people get along with each other, could improve. But we're going downhill politically in the way people deal with each other. But technology is way ahead of us, but not human relations. It's a terrible situation with our political system now.
Many ways we have too much technology. Too much GPS and spell check and computers doing seemingly everything for you. But in this case, I think it's a very positive step. And certainly it's interesting to someone like myself, but everybody should know about his or her heart health, and the ability to find that out by wearing a device is quite groundbreaking, to say the least.
Another
topic, Ron, you're not a very happy topic, but he certainly lived a long and important life. We found out that a presidential candidate, both of whom we admire, John Anderson, passed away last Sunday. He was a unique individual, a liberal Republican who did run a very spirited independent campaign for president. But we don't really see a lot of liberal Republicans anymore. The party system, and again, partially because of the current administration, has become rather divided, to say the least. And I guess, and we've talked a little bit about John Anderson before, Ron, and Scott Spears, of course, one of my fellow managers here at the station, the interviewer to the stars. It goes without saying he spoke to John Anderson a few months ago. But of course, Scott speaks to almost everybody, so how is that surprising? Any thoughts about the legacy of John Anderson, Ron? And would you agree with me, as we talked about earlier, don't see a lot of liberal Republicans anymore?
No, we don't see liberal Republicans anymore. I mean, right now, Susan Collins of Maine is considered the most moderate, the word moderate. But even she surprises when she goes and defends Jeff Sessions when he's being nominated for Attorney General. So I'm a little disillusioned with her. But I wrote an article, actually, on History News Network, interestingly, on March 5th, it was published this year, called The Last Serious Qualified Third-Party Candidate for President Was... And I'm arguing it's John Anderson more than anybody since World War II. And I think that's still the case. This was a man of great principle. He moderated his views in some ways, which made him more acceptable over 20 years of the House of Representatives from Rockford, Illinois. And he was really a person I flirted with in 1980 about voting for him. At the end, I didn't because I thought, well, if I vote for independent candidates, it's only going to help Ronald Reagan, and I did not want Reagan to win. I was not 100% happy with President Carter, but I figured, well, I can't do anything to help Reagan, so I voted for Carter. Of course, Reagan had enough support even so, 51%, and John Anderson ended up with 6.7% of the vote. But I think he was a man whose viewpoints were very principled, and my dissertation advisor for my PhD, Arthur Schlesinger Jr., who, of course, worked with the Kennedys, ended up voting for John Anderson in 1980, which I learned recently that he had done, and so did Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, and I gather so did you.
Well, I wasn't old enough to vote back then, but I did like John Anderson. Certainly, I.
Oh, okay. As I thought you'd actually voted for him, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't old enough. I'm not that old, but I'm almost. But anyway, certainly I admired Carter as a man. I just thought his presidency was difficult, and it was tricky. I didn't like Reagan's very, very conservative views, and again, starting college then, I didn't think he really was in favor of people getting a reasonable amount of aid, not a free tuition, but a reasonable amount of aid for college. I remember being asked to write to my congressman asking...
Yeah, I'm realizing now you were about a year short of being able to vote for him, right? Because I guess you were not 18 in 1980, right?
I turned 18 in, 1982.
Oh, 82. Okay, so you couldn't vote, but you would have voted for John Anderson, I gather, huh?
Honestly, Ron, it was kind of tricky, and you know, I did like Anderson. Liberal Republicans, in many ways, aligned with the views that I have, as again, I'm conservative economically and rather liberal or progressive. I'd rather say progressive in people type mm-hmm. issues, and I think Anderson fit that bill. I wasn't thrilled with the Carter presidency. I mean, I know it wasn't his fault that we had lines at the gas station or 15% interest rates, etc. But I thought he could have had a better grasp on the country. But and I found Reagan to be too let's say friendly to conflict and awfully conservative, despite being an actor.
Yes.
I mean, again, I admired his sense. His sense of humor. He was hilarious, and obviously a good leader, as you said, an attractive as a personality. But his politics probably a bit too far to the right for both of us. So,
yes.
Good question. But I very well might have voted for John Anderson. I remember if you do, Ron, the vice presidential debate wasn't there some guffaw by the guy that Anderson chose as his running mate?
Actually, there was no vice presidential debate in 1980. You're thinking of 1992, Ross Perot.
Yes, you're right. It was Ross Perot.
Yeah, you know, he was crazy, yeah.
Yeah, on live radio, we're not going to edit anything. It was actually kind of funny that I confused him with Ross, and I just thought
yeah,
about Ross Perot.
Yeah, that's 12 years later, Admiral Stockdale, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that was crazy, yeah.
Yeah, there was something about that. It wasn't like he did something, let's say, silly or less than intelligent, like Dan Quayle and his famous potato spelling, or anything Sarah Palin might have said.
comparing himself to John F. Kennedy.
Yeah, it was more he was just, I guess, you know, kind of goofy in a lovable way, I guess. And at that point, people kind of remembered him that way. Yeah, and Perot also being an alternative candidate, and again, somewhat like Donald Trump, again, a businessman, an outsider, but some very different viewpoints. But
yes, I must say that I didn't care for Ross Perot, but if I had to pick between Ross Perot and Donald Trump, I would take Ross Perot.
Certainly. And Perot, again, he was kind of a short guy and not really the best speaker out there, but certainly a smart man, generally self-made. And yet you admire him, but is he presidential material? I guess that's another topic. But that just makes...
John Anderson was presidential material. That's the difference.
Right. And that just makes what you study, Ron, presidential history, ever more interesting, as we could talk about this forever. I mean, again, as I said, I've never been a big history buff, although I certainly think it's important to learn about your country.
I wanted to mention that John Anderson, in the last years of his life, the last 30 years after 1980, he lived in Fort Lauderdale, right nearby, and he used to teach at Nova Southeastern University Law School. He was a law school professor at Nova Southeastern University. And at one point, I asked for him to come and to visit my political science American government class at one of the colleges I was teaching at. I mean, I actually spoke to his wife, but the only problem was the cost. It was a $2,000 fee, and the college was not willing to pay it. So I could not get him. But instead, I got Michael Dukakis, a 1988 Democratic candidate for president, who was actually teaching at Florida Atlantic University at that point where I was. And therefore, he actually came to our class, and he did talk about what it was like to run for president 5 years earlier. This was 1993. So I didn't get John Anderson, but I did get Michael Dukakis, and he was a real nice guy. I was very impressed, and I thought, why are you so stiff 5 years ago when he seemed so stiff when he ran? But he was really a cool guy in 1993 as a professor at Florida Atlantic University.
Right. We talked about that earlier. Now, Dukakis didn't charge for his discussion?
Well, partly I think because he was a professor there in the winter term each year for quite a few years, so he was on the campus, and he did not charge anything, but John, and it wasn't a lot really, but the college just said they were not willing to pay $2,000, and I couldn't certainly do it myself. It would have been nice to have had Anderson, but, you know, he was not going to come for free, as you'd say. So right. I did not get to meet him, but I did speak to his wife on the phone, and she told me that.
Right, 2000.
And she survives him, by the way. She's still alive, I see, from the obituary. She survives him.
Right, that's quite a price tag, $2,000. I wish somebody would pay me that for speaking.
Well, he was a former presidential candidate, and it was like 13 years earlier at the time, because 1980, this was 1993, I was trying to get him to come, yeah.
Okay, well, that's the part of the trials and tribulations of being in academia, as they say. So, again, we mourn the passing, but celebrate the great life and political legacy of Mr. John Anderson. Ron, we're coming up on the 11th anniversary of the passing of Gerald Ford, a unique president. He was never directly elected. He was appointed by Nixon after Agnew resigned and lost the election to Mr. Carter in 1976. And I am correct, Ron, he is the most recent president to pass away, right?
Yes, Reagan in 04 and then Ford in 06. You're correct.
I was pretty sure, but again, you're the presidential expert. I hate to have a discussion with you where I mention a presidential fact and you know that I'm wrong. So, thankfully.
Actually, I've never been wrong yet.
You're rubbing off on
me.
I
can remember.
As you and some of my Facebook friends saw, I recently posted a photograph of a purchase that I made at a business event that I went to last week, where I purchased an autographed framed photo of Jerry Ford. It did have a certificate of authenticity. It was real. I did drill the person I bought it from. He gave me a discount on it. It came to $400. That's pretty good. I mean, it's a nice photo with a real autograph. It's framed and has a real certificate of authenticity. Certainly, I collect autographs and memorabilia. And this certainly is pretty close to the top of my collection. And I'm deciding where I'm going to hang it, probably somewhere in my office/studio area. As it's
That's great. Congratulations on
that. Pretty cool gadget. I did joke, Ron, that it would be your birthday present as well as winter holiday present, because your birthday is coming up. And not too distant
2 weeks,
future.
Yeah.
And the winter holidays, or Festivus, as whatever you want to call it, that's also coming up. But unfortunately, Ron, I was a bit selfish, and instead I bought myself a Festivus present.
So, that's perfectly understandable.
If I make you a little bit envious.
I was stunned when you even seemed to suggest that you might give. I said, what? I thought that was really quite crazy, although I obviously wouldn't turn it down, but I did not expect it, no.
But so if you're a little envious, I'm sorry. I guess you've rubbed off on me. And we talk about Gerald Ford. Again, he had a difficult presidency. The pardoning of Richard Nixon will live in infamy, I would say. But
Ted Kennedy forgave him 25 years later and said he had done the right thing. So he was rehabilitated in the minds of many after years of getting away from the emotions of the moment, which is also what happens.
Lighter things about President Ford. He was a football player, one of our most athletic presidents.
Also a klutz, though.
Right.
He kept on tripping, going up and down Air Force One, and he also hit people over the head with golf balls a lot.
Right. Well, no one's perfect.
But he was one of the most athletic, I think maybe the most athletic, actually, president of all. It's ironic that he's so klutzy in his own age.
On a serious note, his late wife, Betty Ford, has done incredible things, and for a problem that's very serious here in Ohio, the drug abuse problem.
Yes, and I've always said that right now I wish we had Gerald Ford in the wings to take over from Donald Trump, but we don't. And that's a sad thing because I don't think Mike Pence or Paul Ryan match up to Gerald Ford in any sense.
And I would, I joke about, I think he's one president whose opinion, again, I'm sure you've rubbed off on me, Ron, but my opinion of him has improved. Because I wasn't a big fan when he was president. I mean, I admired him. I know he came in at a difficult time. But I felt Carter.
Well, I was not a big fan of his either, but I've come to admire him more. And when I do lectures on him, I'm always much more praiseworthy than I used to be.
Right.
Because I think he's the last president who was a Republican who, in my mind, was really someone I could like and admire. Because the H.W. Bush is all right. I respect him, but he's not exactly a warm human being. I think Ford was, and I did not care for Reagan, although I liked his personality, but I didn't like his views, and I was not a big fan of George W. Bush. But, of course, all of them are certainly better, in my mind, than Donald Trump. That's for sure.
And on a slightly humorous note, Ford smoked a pipe. Don't have a lot of pipe-smoking presidents, do we?
No, I guess we have not had one since. That's true.
And of course, Clinton smoked cigars and did other things with cigars. that was what I wanted to say, but I can't say it without bursting into laughter. So we talked about FDR. He smoked cigarettes. And again, smoking cigarettes during the 30s and 40s was obviously more acceptable than it is now. But on a serious note, Scott spoke to his granddaughter, and she talked about how his heavy smoking, along with the polio, et cetera, caused him to pass away at a relatively young age. So,
I don't think it helped. He died at 63. I think that smoking, certainly, even though we didn't know it officially, how could anybody ever think it was a good thing to do? I've always amazed how people would think, just because there's no statement from the government that smoking is good, when tobacco in your lungs is not good. I think anybody with brains would realize that, but a lot of people get hooked on it. That's the problem.
Right, and I guess Obama smoked, but he quit smoking after he was elected.
Yeah, I thought you were brighter than that when I first heard that he used to smoke. But, well, at least he stopped. Apparently stopped doing it, yes.
Yeah, we never quite know. There are always pictures on the internet circulating of him smoking, so who knows? And as I said, I can't say it with a straight face, but Clinton was known for cigars and didn't necessarily smoke them, but that was certainly. But it was part of his legacy, Ron. It was one of the highlights of the investigation. We're not going to talk about right now, but I think it was.
And it also undermines his wife in the long term. When you think about it,
right? And it does. It's just one of, I guess, in pop culture, one of the things that occurred during the election. So I kind of thought about that. Maybe I'm being a little bit silly, but we need a little bit of.
When you think about it, Clinton administration not only at the time, but actually since. It had some good impact, but actually looking at what's happening now, we can say the Clinton administration led to what we have now in a way, the repudiation of his wife, which is partly due to him, a lot due to her, but I really think the way things are going, in a way we could almost blame partly on Bill Clinton's recklessness back then and how they dealt with that issue,
But anyway, Ford smoked a pipe, and that's all he did with his pipe, and rest in peace, President Ford. Again, we've definitely feel your legacy has improved, and I do value very much my purchase of last week, and I will hang it.
Well, you should. It's wonderful. Congratulations again.
Now, Ron, you are a collector of presidential memorabilia. You don't have any, I guess, autographs, but you have bobbleheads. And
I have bobbleheads. I have busts of every president except for Trump, and I've had a friend who said, "I'm going to get you a bust or a bobblehead of Donald Trump, and I said, no, thank you, I don't want it. He laughed, you know, because I had a couple of former students who spent time with me on Sunday separately, one with his wife, one without his wife, and, you know, and the one with his wife was joking about getting me a bobblehead or a bust, and I said, no, thank you, I will do without that. I really have no desire to have a Donald Trump bust or bobblehead. Now, if somebody gives me it, I'm not going to throw it out, but I really don't want it, you know, really. But every single president I do have busts of, and a lot of them bobbleheads, and I also have many presidential homes, you know, indeed from, you know, from Danbury Mint, the actual homes of FDR and Lincoln and Jefferson and the Adamses and also Washington and others as well. So I'm a collector of buildings as well.
So you have presidential memorabilia, no autographs, and you do not plan on spending any dimes on Donald, so to speak.
No, not really. But I must say that I also have a lot of national convention programs of different conventions where, you know, where candidates were nominated. So I got that, but it's not with signatures or anything like that, no. That is actually very expensive.
We are speaking with Dr. Ronald Fineman, a regular guest and friend of the station, and a rather good friend of myself. We talk just about every day about politics and other interesting things and issues facing the great world that we live in. We call this show a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Ron, you want to talk a little bit about the conservation issue in the great state of Utah, which your son is involved in.
Yes. My son is involved with the Conservation Lands Foundation, and they and other conservation groups have filed lawsuits against the diminishing of two national monuments in Utah. And today, Donald Trump was there, and he's cutting down one of them by 85% and the other one by about 45%. And, of course, he was raving about Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, who is the president pro tempore of the Senate, third in line to be president, he's 83 now. He's going to be apparently running for re-election, although there's been discussion that Mitt Romney might run. But now, at last I heard, he's not going to run unless Hatch doesn't run. And, you know, Trump has made it clear he does not want Romney in the Senate, and he tells Hatch next year at 84 to run again. But he's been there for 42 years, and I wrote an article a while back on my blog, the Progressive Professor, about that. I think people in their 80s should not be in Congress. I think 80 should be a good retirement age. We have 8 senators who are actually over 80, 7 Republicans and 1 Democrat. The Democrat is Dianne Feinstein. She's going to be 85 next year, and she's running again. And I say this really is not right. I know there's no age limit, but I think when you've reached 80 or early 80s, it's time to give someone else a chance. And based on what Orrin Hatch has said recently, when he said he thought Trump was one of the best presidents of his lifetime, I really do think, plus his raving and getting angry at Sherrod Brown in a committee hearing, Sherrod Brown of Ohio, I really think he started to lose it, and it's really time for him to retire. And to think he's 3 heartbeats away from the presidency, in theory, is horrifying.
So even though you're a big fan of Dianne Feinstein, we've discussed how, instead of nominating a favorite of mine, Geraldine Ferraro, that is so hard to say.
Well, I think she would have been a better choice for vice president with Walter Mondale. That's, of course, a long time ago. But now she's 80, you know, she's going to be 85, and I really think it's enough already. Come on, you know, and she will be challenged. She probably will win, but she will be challenged. But I really do not think it's a good thing that once you're in the 80s, you really should not be in the Congress, in my opinion. Now, if you're a little over 80 when you're finishing your term, okay, but not run for a term when you're in your 80s, which means she would be 91 and Hatch would be 90 at the end of the next term. And, you know, likely of not surviving it. But even if you do, I mean, it's just not, I think, proper. We need, I think we need new fresh blood. We really do.
So despite,
now, Romney's not a kid, but he's at least younger, you know.
So despite your liking of her, and I'm certainly a fan also, we feel 85 is a bit too old to be.
First run, that means a 91 that she would be, you know. And she might do fine, and even a 91 in theory could run again. But I just think it's time to have change when someone has reached the age of 80, that someone else should be given the opportunity, and the state deserves younger membership.
From an article in CNN, Ron, Donald Trump's personal attorneys claim that the president cannot be guilty of obstructing justice raises two stunning possibilities that could cast the Russia investigation and its threat to his White House in a new and even more serious light. Trump's lawyer, John Dowd, in a comment that he made on an interview, raised the question of whether Donald Trump's legal team has already accepted that special counsel Robert Mueller as grounds to conclude that Trump did in fact obstruct justice by firing former FBI director Comey. This idea, Ron, that Donald Trump can kind of do what he wants, that he's above the law, but that doesn't really apply with presidents, does it? They have to follow the law like anybody else. And
And Richard Nixon claimed the same thing, and look what happens. The difference was it was a Democratic Congress that impeached him, although some Republicans went along. In this case, we have a Republican Congress which is totally unwilling to do anything about him, just as long as they get their tax bill, which is going to rip off the middle class and the poor. It's just infuriating. I mean, it's very hard to not be angry at all the kind of stuff that's going on now, but the president is not above the law, and we do not have a dictatorship, but he's moving more and more in that direction, and we have to stop that somehow. It's just very difficult, though, but I don't think we can remain silent. The damage he's doing in so many areas, plus his attitude of autocracy, is just unacceptable.
So the president certainly is in charge of the executive branch of the government, but it doesn't mean that what he or she says goes and is always without fault. And maybe Donald Trump needs to learn about that.
Well, also, he's been attacking the judiciary and also attacking the news media. This is very dangerous. And also the bureaucracy of government, including the diplomatic corps and many other government agencies. This is just so self-destructive for the country in the long term. So even though he's not getting legislation through up to this point, he is doing a lot of damage in other ways.
The rhetoric is still important, especially among the people that support him. Donald Trump's official tweet, 8 a.m. Sunday morning. After years of Comey, with the phony and dishonest Clinton investigation and more, running the FBI, its reputation is in tatters, worst in history. But fear not, we will bring it back to greatness. So we acknowledge that this president says what's on his mind. Whether we agree with him is a different matter.
But he's undermining the FBI, and Eric Holder, the last attorney general under Obama, has really condemned him for this and said the FBI is a professional agency, and it's not in tatters. If anything, really, it's Donald Trump's reputation and his record is in tatters, but he is like outside the normal limits, and he seems to be uncontrollable, and that scares me every day.
We've also learned that the travel ban for the predominantly Muslim countries has been upheld. That's been a very controversial issue, and I don't know how much of an impact it'll have on the upcoming elections for other Congress people, for elections in states, especially ones that may have a larger number of Muslim citizens. Any thoughts on that, Ron? Is something we think we should investigate further? We should not use the ban at all, or is there some kind of a compromise?
I do not believe the ban as it is should be allowed, but the courts apparently are allowing it for now. Michigan, of course, has a large Muslim population, particularly near Detroit. I don't know how it would affect things there, but what disturbs me is family members of people that are already in this country are not going to be allowed in now. That, I think, is reprehensible. We're not talking about just anybody being let in, but I think the ban is too strict, but the court at the moment has upheld it. And, you know, the courts are being changed at all levels by many new judicial appointments. So we may be seeing this direction being continued and having all kinds of restrictions on people migrating to the U.S. And that, I think, is a sad story about our history of immigration, that we're actually closing the door to many people based on their religion and nationality.
Do you think we need to have any restrictions as to who can be an immigrant, who can come to the United States?
Well, certainly. I do think we need to have what they call vetting. You know, but I think the vetting is pretty good, and there's been very few cases of anybody who's been let in that has been shown to have caused any violence. But obviously, you have to have strong vetting. But I do think that going beyond that, it's only promoting hatred of, you know, of many people toward this, you know, toward Muslims and people from the Middle East, and also just, you know, Islamic civilization. And, you know, we have to deal with the reality. We have to communicate with these people around the world. And I think it's going to make our country less safe, because it could cause an uprising by people in the country who are angered at what's going on. So I do not think it's counterproductive.
We are speaking with the regular political commentator, good friend of mine, and of the radio station, Dr. Ronald Fineman from Boca Raton, Florida, on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Ron, in addition to being a published author and professor, you publish a blog that you pretty much contribute to every day. Took a short break during the recent hurricane-induced weather problems, but you were back after a few days
yeah.
with great commentary and facts and interesting tidbits from history. On November 30th, you wrote, Trump declares his 10-month presidency best in American history. Is he for real? You wrote, is he totally delusional or just a great, massive liar? Now, Ron, how would you say that Donald Trump's first 10 months stack up against recent presidents?
Well, again, as far as rhetoric, he stands out for constantly making a fool of himself and saying outrageous things. But if you look at his accomplishments, yes, he's had an effect on the judiciary a bit and also on gutting much of the Environmental Protection Agency and the State Department in the sense of executive actions. That he's done. But there's been no legislation passed. This might now pass this tax bill, but it's really it's not a tax bill. It's really a ripoff giving to the wealthy, taken away from the average person, and using it as an excuse to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid in the future years. And I think it's just beyond belief that this is going on. But he has not accomplished anything. And for him to say the best in the first 10 months, and as I wrote, what about Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1933, the New Deal? What about Lyndon Johnson and the Great Society in 1964? Even what about Ronald Reagan in 81, and even Obama and Lincoln and so many others in the past? It shows his total ignorance of what's going on, and I don't understand how he doesn't realize how foolish he sounds. But he is really showing ignorance and also his own ability, which has been mapped by the Washington Post and New York Times, to lie more than any other public figure in modern times, at least five times a day.
So you don't agree with the Donald that this is the best 10 months in presidential history. Is it the worst, do you think? Is it the worst, or how does it stack up?
Well, it's hard to say worst because it's the same thing by all the presidents, so I don't know. But certainly in modern times, I don't think there's any president who has accomplished less and divided the country more than Donald Trump, that's for sure. But trying to compare every president would take a real research project. But, you know, there have been presidents who had disastrous times, but I just think, you know, that we are going down the road toward war, possibly with North Korea and Iran. If he decides to kick Tillerson out based on what we're reading, and he makes Pompeo, the CIA head, the new Secretary of State, and he appoints Tom Cotton, Senator from Arkansas, to be CIA head, we know that those two men really do believe that the Iran agreement must be ripped up and we must confront Iran and, of course, North Korea. And I could see us being involved in two major wars in the next year or so if those changes come about. Even without the changes coming about, it could happen, because Tillerson has very little effect on Donald Trump's actions, and they really are not getting along. And I don't like Tillerson. I don't think he's very good, but at least he has some rationality. But Trump has none, and Pompeo and Tom Cotton are really hawks to the extreme, and that worries me a great deal.
Now, not everybody, of course, agrees with you, Ron. We have Trump's approval rating at about 1 in 3. We talked about Orrin Hatch, the Republican Senate president pro tempore, age, nice ripe old age of 83, the longest serving Republican after 41 years in the upper chamber. He disagrees with you. He feels that Donald Trump is one of the best presidents of his lifetime. And if we were to have Orrin Hatch here in the studio with me, and what would you want to ask him? How would you want to challenge him about saying that?
I would be very, very direct. I would say, what do you base that on? Give me information to tell me what he's accomplished in 10 months. I think he'd have trouble answering it. If you really watch him when he's in Senate hearings, he doesn't really have much to say that is substance. He heads the hearings, and he gets angry very easily. I've known he's very temperamental, not lately. And I think that's a sign also that he's no longer as tolerant. And he used to be. I got to say, Orrin Hatch used to get along. He used to get along with Ted Kennedy. Imagine that. They actually worked on some legislation years ago. You know, and, you know, he was a person who could cross the aisle, and I give him credit for that. But actually, in the last, you know, even before Trump, the last 5-10 years, I think he has become much more extreme. And I think it's a sign of I think, behavioral issues that could be the beginning of dementia. When somebody's 83, not everybody gets it, but it's certainly that their behavior seems to be different and less rational and less willing to negotiate and cross the aisle, I think it's worrisome. And that's the problem when people get into that age group.
So we've talked about how some politicians have changed their viewpoints. Oftentimes they moderate. For example, John Kasich has become much more moderate in the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
But Orrin Hatch has kind of gone in the other direction, and he's also become kind of grumpy. Doesn't play well with others, so to speak.
Well, he's also about 20 years older than Kasich. Maybe Kasich will be that way when he's 83. I hope not, but he's in his 60s. So I think the age is a factor. Again, I don't believe in age discrimination, but I don't think it's unreasonable to say that members of Congress, like John Conyers, who's had now sexual harassment charges, he's 88. I think it's time to go. Come on. He's going to be 90 in the next term if he wants another term of the House. And I do think that really 80 should be, I can't be done legally, but I think it should really be understood. Once you're hitting 80 or the early 80s, if you're in the middle of a term, you should not run again. But, of course, it's not a legal matter. It cannot be prevented.
Ron, wouldn't it seem logical that someone who's been in Congress, you're talking 30, 40-plus years, that you see all kinds of viewpoints. You've seen, obviously, more women, more minorities become members of Congress, which is wonderful. And you wouldn't you
yes.
be more – again, this would apply to Democrats also – wouldn't you be more likely to become more moderate as you see all different viewpoints instead of kind of going the other way? Does that seem reasonable to you?
I would think so, but we have both parties. I give both parties blame that they go that now it's the fact that not one member of the Democratic Party is on voting pattern to the right of a Republican, and the same with the Republican. None of them are to the left. Even Susan Collins is more conservative than the least liberal Democrat, and vice versa, you know, as far as the direction. So it's just, they're so loyal to party, and I understand it to an extent, but I do think you have to still have an independent mind, and if the only thing you're worried about is getting reelected, and that's not the way you should be in office. You should stand up for your principles. If you disagree with your party, you say so, and you follow through. And the worst thing is, you get defeated. If you do, nobody wants that. But it's not as if these people need this job to survive economically. And I think you have to live with yourself and have your own principles. And if I was ever in office, I would speak what I felt and do what I believed. And if I got defeated, so be it.
So you're seeing Hatch as almost becoming a yes man for conservative Republicans and maybe not even thinking on his own anymore, that he's out of, after 40 years, he's out of ideas maybe.
I think he is, because he was more, contributing and I think positive years ago. I do remember that. Not true of all Republicans, but Orrin Hatch has definitely become much more rigid and inflexible as the years have gone by. And he sounds like he's just complaining all the time. I think he must be very grouchy. And it doesn't have to be that way, but he's become a grouch, I think, much more than he ever was. And it doesn't reflect well on him.
And we contrast him with John Kasich, who hasn't been a senator. He was a representative. Now, of course, he's governor, but he's had multiple presidential aspirations. He's certainly become more moderate and more likable. Again, doesn't have a great charisma, but I think he's improving. And mm-hmm. we see just changes in politicians' personalities as they get older and advance in their political career. Let me ask you about one politician, Ron, that I imagine you're quite fond of, Howard Metzenbaum, from, of course, an Ohio senator. Long-serving senator who is known as a fighter for consumers. Again, certainly controversial.
Can you imagine him today, what he would be saying about Trump? Could you just imagine?
Yeah, I could just, it might be rated PG-13, let's put it that way.
I think so, yes.
But he's someone, well, I think...
X-rated even X-rated.
Right, I think he's someone who was always outspoken and probably wouldn't really change much either way, but maybe Trump would light a spark, so to speak, and he would really become quite upset and make no bones about it, that a block of a better term. But at least we're getting mm-hmm. the same person we've always gotten. He was that way when he was younger. He was known as being feisty. Again, love him or hate him, you have to admire that, his outspokenness. But he certainly did a lot for consumers.
Well, also Senator John Glenn, who wasn't as feisty, but he was a really good senator, I think, and did a great job all those years he was there.
Did you see John Glenn, again, another good point, again, both Ohio senators. Do you think his politics changed at all as he advanced in his career? He also ran for president once, as I recall. So
yeah, but he was very boring as a candidate in 1984. He didn't have the personality. I would call him a moderate liberal. He was not as liberal as Metzenbaum, but I think he was, from what I recall, he was quite consistent in his views. But I always admired him, and I just wish his personality had been more vibrant, because he probably would have made a pretty good president, but he just didn't come across well in campaigning.
And now we have Portman and Brown, who are
Portman's not that conservative, but you know, he's sort of like bland. He is a very bland person. Don't you agree?
I would say not the greatest in charisma, but I say the same thing about Brown. So Brown being fairly liberal, not as liberal as Metzenbaum, and Portman again he's moderate on some issues. I think he's moderated a bit since he began his political career.
Well, one thing is that he came out for, you know, gay rights once he discovered his son was gay. That I found interesting. It's like you have to have a personal experience to open up your mind to new ideas. But why does it have to be only when that happens? I don't understand why.
Right. All I can say is once you are able to make a judgment based on your own observation, your opinion is likely to change. But certainly, if you feel that way, regardless of your own personal situation, it is more admirable. But again, he certainly went against the beliefs of his fellow Republicans, and especially in Southwest Ohio, which in the suburban Cincinnati area is quite conservative. And I think he certainly took a bit of a risk in saying that, but you have to admire him because it was important to him, and he made no secret of it. So kind of a tricky thing, but yeah, Portman being interesting in that regard, but again, along with Brown, doesn't have the greatest in terms of charisma, but I think
actually, one thing about Portman, he was budget director for George W. Bush. Now, of course, the budget was broken by Bush because of the wars, but still, supposedly, he believes in the concept, at least, Portman, of a balanced budget or trying to avoid more debt, and yet now he's one of the 51 senators who voted for this tax bill that will add $1 trillion to the debt, so it makes you wonder, how principled are you, even in theory, when you messed up under Bush, but now you're actually adding to it more? I mean, I just don't understand the Republican viewpoint that if Democrats increase the deficit, it's the end of the world, but if they do it, it's all right.
So just when you thought Portman was becoming more moderate, he kind of throws a curve at us, and so we're not quite sure now what to think of in this regard.
Well, same with Susan Collins. How about McCain? McCain voted against the end of Obamacare, and now he suddenly, you know, this is going to affect Obamacare, this bill, and suddenly he reverses, and people who have cancer apparently will lose Medicare coverage to cancer treatment, but he gets cancer treatment. So it really irritates me that he would do that. What is wrong with him? And maybe it's also that he's not totally there, you know, mentally at 81. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it's sort of like infuriating. He's good in some ways, and other ways you just want to smack him, you know?
Right. It seems like they both threw a curve at us, but that's kind of how politics is. You never know. And it makes it interesting, but you like to think you know what you're going to get when you, don't click the lever anymore, when you press the touchscreen to vote for your favorite candidate. But sometimes even the most knowledgeable of us can be surprised.
Unfortunately, that's the case. Susan Collins is another case. Susan Collins, I always admired as one of the best, but boy, she disappointed me this year between her back and forth on these budget bills and on Obamacare. First not trying to end it completely, now seemingly changing, plus her support of Jeff Sessions speaking to him in the Judiciary Committee when he was nominated, saying he was, you know, they were good friends. And I thought, you can have a good friend, but you think he really should be Attorney General? Why can't you separate and say you like him, but you don't want to speak up for him? It really floored me when she did that.
All right. The idea that you have to be dedicated to certain candidates and certain ideas, it's always concerned me, and that's probably why I'm an independent. I like to form my own opinions. But it's certainly different when you're in national politics. You have to align yourself with either party. It's kind of how the system is, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunately. That's why John Anderson could not do better, because he was the independent, although a Republican, the independent nominee. But he stood out because he was different. That's what I liked about him.
Right, I remember seeing in the voting booth back when we had levers that yes, he was listed as a liberal and a Republican. That doesn't really sound right. I always thought, well, Republicans were conservative, but there are differences.
And well, he was like a Rockefeller Republican, you know, Nelson Rockefeller Republican, which was dying out already by that time, yes.
About ready to wrap up another segment with Dr. Ronald Fineman. Ron, thank you so much for being on the show with us, your commentary and opinions, and our occasional back and forth banter and wisecracks. Always appreciated.
Yeah, thank you again very much. I always had a great time, and I look forward to more such interviews.
Wrap up with just one quick topic, and this affects your neck of the woods. Hurricane Maria and Puerto Rico, many people moving from Puerto Rico to South Florida, and that affecting...
And Central Florida, particularly more central. 200,000 have moved in 2 months. It's going to, I think, over time have an effect on politics in Florida. It'll take time, but I think it's going to turn the, which it is a close one race always in Florida, I think it will turn the state blue in presidential elections. Maybe not in 2020, but I think after that it definitely will.
So it'll affect...
I wrote about that on my blog.
Right. It'll, and you wrote that on the blog on the 3rd, on Sunday. And I agree with you. You're thinking that it'll change the Republican and Democratic balance. And that,
and it could in other states as time goes by with the growing Hispanic, not Puerto Rican so much, Mexican population, meaning Arizona, Texas, Georgia, maybe even North Carolina.
So kind of a wait and see to see how many people will move from Puerto Rico to Central and Southern Florida, and how that
and
might
register and vote. They can automatically citizens.
Right.
But the point is they have to register and vote, and voter suppression is being done in a lot of states like Texas and other places by the Republican governments, and that could cut down the vote. And then, of course, if they're fooling around with the voting machines, you know, oh, there's Russian collusion, that could also change results. So you can never be sure of what the future is going to be the way things are going.
Right, and some... people of some political beliefs might want them to be sure to get out and vote, and some people would prefer that they don't vote, and that's, I guess, part of the political game.
Absolutely.
And the case
correct.
Of who you vote for and who votes for whom and who stays home, and that's all part of the game of politics.
Well, it's hard to get a lot of Democrats out because especially racial minorities, they don't often vote in high numbers. Like even in Alabama for this race coming up of Roy Moore against Doug Jones, the argument is the only way, theoretically, is that Doug Jones can win is to get a large African-American vote out. And then I've read or seen articles or whatever on television, on cable, that apparently there are many African-Americans who are not even aware there's a race coming up a week from today, December 12th, Tuesday. And that's a problem. If people do not vote, things cannot change or cannot go the way you want. So that is a worrisome thing.
So staying informed is obviously important, and not necessarily an obligation as Americans, but something that you and I think is important, especially in 2017.
Of course. Absolutely, yes.
Well, thanks again, Ron, Dr. Ronald Fineman, for being with me here on WWGH Radio. We'll talk again soon. Have a great day.
Okay, thanks again.